5. Written by David Sullivan. It was 2:56 a.m. and Benny walked along the cold path that led to cabins 1, 2, 3, and 4. He didn't care which cabin it was, just as long as there was a child with a sweet soul in it, fast asleep. Benny could see cabin 4 in the near distance and made his way toward the lonely structure. As he came closer to the front door of 4, thoughts floated around in Benny's mind. He was so excited to give the lake her gift, after not giving her one for so long. Benny stood at the front door of 4 and lifted himself up from off the ground, only a little bit. His skin and bones slithered through the door like room temperature butter, and at last he was inside. The inside of 4 had the same layout as 5. Sleeping on the bunk beds in the front room were two older teen boys. Benny looked at them from next to the door and debated if one of them would be good enough. No, they won't do. Too old. Too rotten. He scanned his surroundings to see all the bedroom doors were closed. He looked to his right at the door that led to the first bedroom. Benny slithered silently through the door and hovered in between the two bunk beds, gently lit by the moonlight that shone through the window above the dresser. 4 little boys were fast asleep on the 4 mattresses, dreaming about their wonderful day at Whispering Pines. They dreamt of the canoe rides they all went on at noon, just before lunch. After that, they gathered in the large dining room and ate chicken sliders and salad. Their afternoon was chock full of arts and crafts and little games on the soccer field. The campers had finished the day by sitting around the campfire in Coyote's Cavern, singing cheery tunes as the fire crackled and flickered in the chill wind. In 2 days, the kids would board a bus and drive home to see their parents waiting for them at Pineview United Church with open arms. And the boys Benny was looking at would be reunited with their mommies and daddies. All except one, that is. Benny observed the little boys, who were all cozy under their knit blankets. The blankets were knit by Sherry Smith, who was still mourning the loss of her daughters almost a year later. Crickets chirped outside the cabin and the wood creaked. Benny wanted to leave quickly, but he didn't know which boy to take. All of them seemed pure at heart, and he doubted the lake would be picky, so he simply eyeballed the boy sleeping on the left bottom bunk, Jimmy Hopkins. The young boy, who was only 6 years old, peacefully laid in bed with his index and middle finger in his mouth, his soft ginger head of hair laid upon his pillow. Benny carefully put his arms underneath the boy's legs and torso and lifted Jimmy up. They turned towards the bedroom door. The two went through like dust, and without making a peep, they were suddenly outside. Jimmy still slept in Benny's arms. The boys made their way through the woods and to the dock. He looked down at Jimmy's face, whose cheeks were rosy and eyes were still closed. The two passed 5, who looked at them in horror. Benny was malicious and cruel. She knew that, and she only wished the worst for him. She wanted him dead, more so than he already was. Benny deserved to be crushed under a stone like a beetle, or burned alive like a witch. His crimes against the people of Bevan were unforgivable, and his tiny heart deserved to be lit aflame. Benny walked toward the dock, which sat upon Maple Lake, lonely and infested with moss and rot. The moon lit the lake in a blue hue. Benny stepped off the dock and, as always, levitated to the drop-off spot. But before he was completely there, Jimmy opened his eyes to see the left side of Benny's bloody, deformed face. That alone was enough to make him scream in terror.
Mama!
Benny didn't even look down at the poor screaming child. He just tightened his grip around the boy's torso. Jimmy tried slapping Benny's cheek, but it wasn't enough. He sobbed and begged for his mother's comfort, and Benny kept squeezing his torso tighter and tighter. Jimmy could feel his lungs getting squished as his ribs closed in. He would never get to see his two older sisters again. He would never get to hug his mom or dad again. His classmates would wonder where he was. He would snap. Jimmy's sobs suddenly stopped, and his arms went limp. The sound of his ribs cracking echoed over the skin of the lake. The force was so powerful, one of his left ribs struck the boy's heart. The child's eyes stayed open, looking up at the stars that hung above Bevan. When Benny was finally at the spot, he dropped Jimmy into the lake and looked down as the corpse descended into the darkness.
That has to work. It must,
Benny muttered to the lake. He didn't get a response. He only made his way back to the cottage where he would wait to see if Jimmy was enough and if the empty pit in his stomach would be filled. But it wasn't. As the sun rose, Benny left the cottage and made his way back to Five. He felt hopeless, embarrassed, angry. If Jimmy isn't enough, then what is? Nothing, that's what, Benny finally decided. He made his way through the front door of the cabin to hear the sound of counselors yelling and asking questions over at Four. Benny accepted that the lake would most likely never be satisfied. Perhaps he just had to wait for the right time, and by then, the lake would accept whatever gift he gave her. Time will tell, Benny thought to himself as he crept into the shadows of Five. Time will tell. By sunset, Whispering Pines was barren, and all the kids, counselors, and staff members had gone home. The little gifts for the lake, my love, were almost all either buried somewhere else in British Columbia or had been eaten away. A tear fell down Benny's cheek that night, as he was confused as to why the lake and God had ignored his wishes. What he had done to those victims was a good deed, he felt. But what hurt the most was the unknown. He still couldn't help but ask himself why he was doing this, or why he had this instinct. He felt there was a chapter in his story that had been ripped from the book, a very important chapter. If he could remember, he would probably get answers, but he wasn't so lucky. Months went by. Years. The woman eventually stopped coming to Five. Hell, there was nobody. Benny Sawyers was alone, standing in between life and death. His pulse came and went. The thumping of muddy blood through his veins was all he could feel. No stone on the ground or sharp twig in his arm was enough for him to flinch. As decades went on, Benny's soul faded more and more to the point where he was an unrecognizable being with deadly eyes and a foul grin. His arms became thin and long, and the skin around his torso became almost completely torn. There was simply no Benny Sawyers anymore. The sweet, precious boy who lived in Kelowna, B.C., and only wanted to do a kind thing for the girl he loved, was no longer walking around Bevan. The boy who loved his mother dearly and would do anything for her had melted away like slush. The boy his mother was so proud of. Gone. The corpse in Five would walk along the trails of Bevan and hum to himself. Whispering Pines continued to hold camp programs over the summer, and he didn't mind. he would simply walk back and forth from 5 to the cottage. That was his life. Though, as time went on, the empty pit in his stomach began to feel more and more empty. The virus became more deadly, and the lake became hungry again. The corpse in 5 thought this era in his afterlife was over. But viruses never completely go away. They lay dormant and only become deadlier. He was able to hold it off for a few years, but by 2019, the instinct became stronger. He needed to give somebody to the lake, somebody truly pure of heart and sweet of nature. He needed a soul that was clean and blossomed. Would this soul be enough? The corpse didn't know. He didn't know when the cycle would end. Until his small, thumping heart was crumbled into dust or ashes, the killings in Bevan would never end. His heart needed to be lit ablaze like a dead mouse in a bonfire. Who would light the flame? As the corpse said, time will tell. The corpse would wait in 5 until a clean soul walked through the front door. He would wait and wait until one morning on June 30th, Devon Holloway walked through the front door with his suitcase. The young man who would eventually lose his lover to the claws of what stood in 5.